You're listening to the MoneyWeb Now podcast series with Simon Brown. Live streamed every weekday at 6:30 a.m.
It's Thursday, 19 December. Bank of Japan rate decision expected soon. A 0.25% increase is consensus. Take rates to 0.5%. I'm Simon Brown, coming at you loud and recorded from remote studios in Rosebank. All shows this week are recorded. We've got two long interviews, no markets, no headlines. Today we are chatting with Mateta Tolari, head FX execution at RMB. What drives the rand? Is it our economy or is it the US dollar? And how did we compare to other EM currencies this year? Mwandidi Shalobo, chief economist, Agricultural Business Chamber of South Africa. What happened to agriculture in the third quarter GDP and how's rain forecasts for this planting season? This podcast is brought to you by Stanlib Asset Management. Invest in more global opportunities through their partnership with JP Morgan Asset Management.
MoneyWeb Now on the money. Also available on podcast.
I'm chatting with Mateta Tolari. He, of course, head FX execution at RMB. Mateta, I appreciate the time. I want the rand. I'm trying to get a sense of what really drives our currency. I mean, are we just following the US dollar and in essence just keep an eye on the dollar index, the DXY? Or does our government of national unity and a functioning ESCOM, etc.? I mean, how much of an influence does that play on our currency as opposed to just the world follows the dollar?
Good morning, Simon. And I suppose it's a very interesting dynamic, and especially for the rand over the past year. I mean, if you think about it, you know, we're predominantly driven two-thirds by what happens on a global sphere, and then the other third what happens locally. But I mean, the rand has experienced material volatility spikes over the past year amid a confluence of both domestic, you know, eccentric risk factors and also an upheaval in the geopolitical climate. I mean, if you think about the several factors, including the intensified load shedding, the grey listing by the Financial Action Task Force, the deterioration in the performance of some key economic logistics and infrastructure, including the rail and port performance, you know, the increased geopolitical risks in a year where countries accounting for more than 50% of global GDP hosted elections. That just shows you how 2024 was for the rand. And I mean, increased domestic peculiar risk factors ultimately led to a material increase in, you know, the sovereign risk premium associated with rand-dominated assets. You know, the rand also spiking to a peak of 1989 in May last year before a progressive recovery, as some of those risk factors have obviously come and unwound. So you've also seen a progressive, you know, stabilization in energy supply domestically, and also that is also seen an initial correction in the rand, and we've seen ourselves breaking below that 19 mark against the dollar coming into this year. And then the focus really shifted onto the domestic political, you know, risks ahead of the elections, with risks of a, you know, leftward tilt in governance, driving a real uptick in the risk aversion. Now, this did see the rand obviously, you know, being pressurized somewhat in the run-up to the May 24 elections. And also we saw ourselves getting up to that 1939 before we saw ourselves back down to 1859, especially on the progress of the energy reforms and also the reduced, you know, incidence of energy rationing. So that also saw a May rally where we saw ourselves below 18 just after the elections, and obviously amid uncertainty about the ANC's loss in the election. So it just shows you that this year, that first half was quite interesting. And then you had, you know, the formation of the government of national unity that that eased domestic and also global investor concerns and also reduced the volatility in the rand. We did see a bullish impulse in the rand after June with President Ramaphosa announcing that government of national unity. We saw the rand rallying all the way from 19 to 17. 1702, and that was just predominantly on local factors. And that's why I say that you have to think about the two-thirds and the one-third of what happens. And then You know, we've seen the Rand, you know, going down to 17.02 up until in September. And then, as we all know, you know, then the beginning of September towards October, this is where now the renewed wave of weakness for the Rand started, as the geopolitical risks and also the U.S. electoral uncertainty and military escalation in Middle East really took center stage. And then we saw the Rand above 18 again, touching a high of 18.44 following the U.S. elections, which was obviously the big center stage for the second half of the year. And now I think at this point in time, we are below, you know, 18. We are around the 17.80 level as we, you know, slowly progress 2 weeks before Christmas. And I think it's really driven by, you know, the importers that have had to buy all their currency for the year. They are done. A lot of, you know, importers have done and taken stock of what they needed to do. The mining houses, on the other hand, they're still producing the gold from the other, you know, from the mines, and they're also still selling. So that selling pressure of dollars will still be there. Seasonality always in December indicates that the Rand tends to be strong. And this is what we're seeing also this year, bar what happened in Nenegate a few years ago. But nonetheless, it looks like it is going to be still quite an interesting year for the Rand in 2025.
Yeah, I take the point. Maybe the big picture, but then we do obviously influence it. And I remember some of our late night cabinet reshuffles certainly did. To switch track a bit, I mean, if we look at our Rand versus other emerging market currencies, of course, we spend all day watching Rand, dollar, maybe a bit of euro, maybe a bit of sterling. But how have other EMs done versus the dollar? I mean, if we had a better year, a worse year, does it matter much?
So, Simon, you know, I think this is one of the years that you really need to pat the Rand on the back. I mean, we always call it the rattlesnake. And I think this year it has really proven to be quite a good pet. I mean, if you think about the whole emerging market basket on a year-to-date basis, you know, from the beginning of Jan up until where we are at this point in time, the Rand is actually the best performing emerging market currency against the dollar. You know, we have returned about 4.2% against the dollar. The second in place is the Malaysian ringgit, and then in third place it is the Thai baht. I mean, the Malaysian ringgit has only returned 4% against the dollar, and then the Thai baht, I mean, it's close to 1%. So it just shows you, you know, how difficult things have been for a lot of emerging market countries. You know, sitting at the bottom of the barrel, the worst performers in this basket has been the Argentinian peso, that has lost 20% against the dollar. We all know the troubles there. The Brazilian real as well, also second last, having lost about 18.5% against the dollar. And then in third last place is you know, the Mexican peso. I mean, that has lost about 15.5% against the dollar. We have seen also the statements from Mr. Trump around what's happening there. So that's also going to be quite a tough year for them, especially going into 2025, and especially that first week where Mr. Trump comes in, January 20. Is he really going to levy those tariffs that he's spoken about? That is also going to be quite interesting to see what happens. So I think, you know, if you think about the whole emerging market basket, yes, it has been tough, but for the Rand, standout performance.
We'll take it. Absolutely. Winner for the Rand. We will take that every day. We'll leave it there. With that, Tulare, Head FX Execution, RMB. Always appreciate the time. The Standard Flexible Income Fund is designed for pre- and post-retirement income and capital preservation needs. Retire without regret with Stanlib Asset Management.
MoneyWeb now. On the money.
I'm chatting with Wandile Shiloba, Chief Economist, Agricultural Business Chamber of South Africa. Wandile, appreciate the time. I want to get to a couple of points around agri and the year past, but I suppose we should start with that third quarter GDP number that saw agricultural down, what was it, 28.8%. I mean, what happened here? Is this something we should be alarmed about, or is this just a sort of the cyclicality of agri and the nature of data?
Yeah, so the couple of things here. I think, Simon, we were expecting that agriculture would underperform. And there are various factors that would contribute to that. One, the fact that we had a bad summer crop season where the overall grains and the and oilseeds production was down by 23% from the previous season to around about 15.4 million tons in the 2023-24 production season. And also the livestock, which makes up about half of our farming economy, has been challenged by animal diseases. We are now getting control of those, but we still struggle with some in KZN and the Eastern Cape. On the basis of that, we thought the sector would continue to contract, but we were expecting a number that is around 8%, 10%, you name it. So 28.8% quarter-on-quarter seasonal adjusted was indeed a shock. Our sense is that we may see Stats say when they release their fourth quarter figures, revising these to a better contraction than the sharp one that we have seen. We think that the timing and them observing what's going on in agriculture and how much the production figures have been changing may be something that had made them think things are worse than they are actually ending up to look like. Because ultimately, while the crop productions are down, but if you look at the crop prices, which compensates for something when you're calculating the gross value added, they've been fairly up.
Okay, fair enough. You mentioned livestock there. We've chatted about livestock over the year. Well, one of the points has been, there's been the disease challenges that we've had in South Africa. There's also been an attempt to try and export more livestock. Are we winning much on the export side, or is those diseases hindering us?
I think we are winning on the both. On the diseases, March of last year, 2023, and starting this year, we had these animal diseases, foot and mouth disease in cattle, avian influenza in poultry, African swine fever in pigs. But if you look at it now, we have managed to control the diseases in much of South Africa. The only provinces that are still struggling with the foot and mouth disease in cattle is Eastern Cape and KZN. Mm-hmm. As a result, if you look at our exports of red meat, take Simon just the first three quarters of this year. The exports are up by roughly 5% from the first three quarters of last year, just over $10 billion. US dollars.
Yeah.
So then in that way, my sense is that we are actually recovering and we are punching above the weight when we think about the beef exports so far, because the last quarter has actually been one of the best quarters in terms of exports. That's the third quarter of this year in some time. And they are up both in value and in volume.
Okay, so some really good news coming through from livestock. What about the citrus farmers? Their struggles have been ports, although by what I can see, that kind of has improved, but maybe improving is more is needed. And then, of course, restrictions from the European Union. Are we winning on either of those fronts for the citrus farmers? Because they're important. It's an industry I think we don't really think about, but it is a significant part of our economy.
I mean, it is a significant part. If you think about just the farming economy, citrus features within the top five industries that are big, along with your maize, livestock, poultry farmers and stuff, then you do see citrus. So it is indeed significant. But this year we have had actually, we've been very fortunate, because in South America, people have struggled with drought. And South Americans are the major producers of juice concentrate in citrus. Mm-hmm. And then now this led to a major increase. I mean, if you could put up a chart now with juice prices, you will see that orange juice prices are at record high levels, the futures prices. And what that has led to then, it led to a situation where South Africa saw its exports slightly declining as much of the oranges are going to the juice market. And then that in part assisted us in managing things well in the export markets, but also in managing well things even in our export markets. Yes, the EU, we still have our case in court so that we can continue to access that EU market. But I think the robust juice market is something that has helped us. And fortunately, it does look like even going into next year, South Americans will take time to recover, which means that orange juice futures prices are likely to remain elevated for some time, which is a benefit for us.
Yeah, I've seen that orange juice chart. It's an astounding chart. It reminds me of the lumber chart during the pandemic. How's our rain been so far for 2024? That's always the big one for farmers, which we really have no control over. I mean, I suppose they can irrigate, but what's the rainfall been like, and what are we expecting into 2025 for rainfall?
I mean, you asking one of the crucial things, because right now, for example, we are at the start of the 2024-25 production season. And to your point, I mean, we can irrigate all of our citrus, 20% of our field crops, and all of other fruits and vegetables. But ultimately, the greater part of grains and the oilseeds in South Africa and sugar is under dry land. So far, the farmers have been optimistic. They want to plant a slightly higher area compared to last year, because that poor yield of last year was because of the midsummer drought. So to see them optimistic and saying they will plant more. And I guess there are two things that are encouraging them. Higher prices generally of agricultural commodities, as well as the fact that we still are in a La Nina cycle.
Yeah.
We're expecting to get the La Nina rains. They are late. So far, we haven't received the rains that we need. We think that the season may be late by roughly a month or so. But ultimately, we are optimistic and thinking that we may have a season of a recovery. But we need that rain badly.
You mentioned, for example, citrus, mostly under irrigation. If they then get rain, they don't irrigate. Does that save the money? I mean, is irrigation a big cost on the line item, or is it like it's nice, but it's not significant?
I mean, irrigation in general in agriculture, it is a significant cost. I mean, I can give you even an industry-wise wide figure. I think agriculture spend around 8 billion rands a year on electricity. So it is quite a substantive figure that we do spend. And of course, the other bigger costs have to do with fertilizers and the other things. Take, for example, a grain farmer, about a third of his input cost is fertilizer.
Yeah.
And that fertilizer this year, it's been great because fertilizer prices are down by roughly 15% year on year. So those are some of the benefits. But certainly the issue of electricity and the rain, if it rains, it does save a lot for some of the guys that don't have to irrigate as frequently.
And this does mean that the load shedding, which mysteriously disappeared back in March, actually benefits farmers as well, because they've now got continuous power. They don't have to worry about suddenly losing power to irrigate. And of course, I mean, the power in slaughterhouses and the like.
It's been a major contributor across the value chain. The fact that, in fact, this year we have had a better season than we anticipated. Because, I mean, though I talk about the sector having to contract, but if you were to look at it, it was not a bad performance all across. The entire fruit and vegetables had a fairly good year in terms of prices and in terms of output, not limited to citrus. You talk to apple farmers, to grape farmers, and the year was better. One of the contributing factors, the fact of we had a stable electricity supply in addition to the renewables that they have put in place and other alternatives, and that helps a great deal with irrigation.
Yeah, thank you, Eskom. We'll leave it there. Wandile Shalobo, Chief Economist, Agricultural Business Chamber of South Africa. Always appreciate the insights. Give your money the return at once without taking a flight with the Stanlib Global Select Fund, an offshore equity fund submanaged by JP Morgan Asset Management.
MoneyWeb now on the money.
That's it for today. This podcast is brought to you by Stanlib Asset Management. Invest in more certainty to navigate volatile market conditions. We're live every weekday morning on the MoneyWeb website and the app, 6:30 a.m. podcast just after 7. Thanks to my team, Eddie, Nobokhle, Nicole, to you for listening, my guests for their time. My name is Simon Brown. This is MoneyWeb Now. If you're loving the show, please leave us an awesome review and a 5-star rating in your podcatcher of choice. We'll chat again tomorrow. Inflation and rates in 2025.
You've been listening to another MoneyWeb Now podcast, posted every weekday at 7 a.m. on moneyweb.co.za. MoneyWeb Now. On the money.